When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the Football Ramble, a new deal for Madison and the bees are buzzing for Wembley. It's Thursday, the 30th of July. I'm Jules Breach.
I am the Jim Campbell.
And I'm Luke Moore.
What a gorgeous day. I'm feeling fresh as a daisy. No headaches down this side of the room. Feeling nice and fresh, boys. How are you both feeling?
I'm feeling actually okay, Jules, because it was a Ramble team drinks yesterday, but I know when to quit.
You are too sensible.
Jim Campbell, on the other hand, doesn't know when
I
to
am,
quit.
I feel like a gumshoe investigating the case of how I got home.
Yeah. Is there a bit of sweat dripping down your forehead there? Have you got the sweats yet, Jim?
I think about it, yes.
No, he's too dehydrated for that. And that's too much information for our listeners.
It is.
Thinking, oh, it's a beautiful sunny day. I open the curtains, look out the window, put the Ramble on, and Jim is sweating. Yeah. People don't want to hear that.
Doesn't seem to know where he is.
No.
No one wants to listen to a sweaty man, do they?
No.
But we were able to catch up on the game last night, so that's a good thing.
Well, I watched the whole game because I was even more sensible than you, Luke, and managed to get home a bit earlier. And what a bloody game it was as well. These are the types of matches that we want to see, especially in the playoffs. It was the second leg, in case you missed it. Brentford beating Swansea by 3-1. So on aggregate across the two legs, it was a 3-2 win for the Bees, and they were 1-0 down heading into the match. We talked about it yesterday, and me, Pete and Vish all did think Brentford would turn it around. So congratulations us, we were right. And secondly, it was a brilliant game. Just what a start from Brentford. In fact, the full 90 minutes, they gave 100%.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're all a little bit worried about their momentum, weren't we, going in? I think it's been discussed across the shows generally sort of in the build-up to this game. But they did, like, just focus. They focused really, really well. And in a game like this, you've got to sort of control the chaos a little bit because it's so emotional. I think actually more so than the final, because the final tends to sometimes be a little bit cagey because there's so much riding on it. But the semi-finals in the playoffs, it's like it's played with the character of a dog that hasn't seen you in ages. Do you know what I mean? It's just so frantic and like
so there was a time, Jim,
and happy.
There was a time when you'd think, and I'm going back a few years here, where you would be like, oh, the best game that happens at Wembley every season is the Championship playoff final. And the FA Cup final is always a bit of a letdown. Mm-hmm. And then that changed a little bit, didn't it, more recently. But this game last night, Brentford attacked it exactly as you'd like, if you were a Brentford fan, you'd like them to, basically hitting them hard, hitting them early, couple of goals in the first 15 minutes. But I think you're absolutely right when you say it's an emotional affair, because Brentford are a better team than Swansea, and they're a better team than Cardiff, and on their day they're a better team than Fulham, right?
Which brings its own pressure.
It does. And also you factor in that it's going to be the last game at Griffin Park, somewhere they've been for over 100 years. The big question mark over them was definitely a mental one, because they go through this amazing run of form. They manage and master football's return since lockdown almost better than any other team. And the last two games of the regular season, they lose, famously. And now they're in the playoffs. And I said on the show a week or so ago, that it's going to be very hard for Thomas Frank to lift them. But he has done that. And they were by far the best team last night, from what I saw. The first goal particularly was an absolute beauty. Amazing through ball.
So
inch perfect sort of onto his right foot.
Like a ridiculous goal. That's how you would score a goal if there wasn't an opposition on the pitch.
Yeah.
You just kick it down the pitch.
The opposition were kind of completely obsolete. They were there fine, but they didn't need to be there because the ball was going nowhere near. Great finish as well.
The perfect counter-attack. That's exactly how you want your team to react when you've just conceded a corner.
Yeah.
And you want to just go down the other end of the pitch and attack that. And they did it perfectly. Like you say, the through ball from Janssen was inch perfect, but the run from Watkins, and what a season he's had as well.
Yes.
26 goals he scored, which I believe is the same amount as Mitrovic, who obviously won the Golden Boot in, because they count that just for the season and not for the playoffs. But what a season he's having.
He's been fantastic. He's a good player. He can do all sorts of different types of goal, and he's been decent for a while, but I think this season he's really kind of matured, hasn't he? I mean, what is he now? He'd be like 23, 24 years old now, starting to mature. Look, I think it's funny because Brentford get another dose of different kind of pressure now going into the playoff final, because they turned this momentum around in quite good style last night. They go up against probably Fulham, but possibly Cardiff. They're a better team than Cardiff. On their day, they're better than Fulham. Their record against both those teams is 10 from 12 points against in the four games. So they beat Fulham both times. I don't think they conceded either in neither of those games. I think they've beaten 1-0 and 2-0. Fulham have been good since the lockdown as well. But Fulham are a team that can flatter to deceive. I've been to Craven Cottage this season. I saw them play against Stoke. They beat them 1-0, fair enough. They made a lot of hard work of it. It could have been different. I mean, and Stoke were in a really bad place at that point as well, if you guys remember. They've obviously turned it around, to use that phrase again, and escaped relegation. But at that point, I think they're in quite big trouble. Fulham didn't look that great. So Fulham are very capable of putting in an underwhelming performance. But we'll see if they get there first. Brentford will be getting there. And if they can manage the occasion at Wembley, it's going to be an incredible situation, because they'll go into their new stadium in the Premier League. Mm. Unbelievable.
One of the things I thoroughly enjoyed about last night's match as well is Mick McCarthy on co-coms.
Always enjoy a bit of Mick.
So enjoyable. As soon as I switched it on and I heard his voice, I thought, oh, this is going to be fun. When later on in the game, Swansea managed to get a goal back, and it was a terrible mistake from Pontus Janssen, who had been excellent.
Yeah. What happened with that?
It was the weirdest. It's like he forgot how to play football for a split second.
Yeah, it was like he's having like an out-of-body experience.
Yeah.
He just forgot where he was.
He momentarily remembered that Mick McCarthy was co-com here. I'm not really nervous.
Mick McCarthy's response to it was, he's made a right rick of that. Yeah. A right rick? Yeah. I've never heard that expression before.
A rick, they say that a lot about keepers. Like,
Rick.
They'll say he's got a rick in him. I think it might.
I don't really know what it means.
Is it short for ricket?
Well, I googled it. I googled it, and it came up on Urban Dictionary as
careful.
Well,
it's a family show.
Yeah. No, it was something to do. It's something to do with Rick and Morty. Which
no
I was
way.
Like, which,
can't be.
Well, that's Urban Dictionary's explanation for it. I'm pretty sure I screen grabbed it.
You can't believe everything you read on the internet.
Lubba dub dub.
To do with being a crazy scientist, and I thought, well, this isn't the explanation I was
no
after.
That's not it, that
yeah,
can't be it, but listen,
it?
We'll
I
throw
think the
out
the thing is more likely.
Yeah, we'll throw it out to Busted. The to listeners at Football Ramble on Twitter. Let us know what the source of the word Rick comes from. But Jim, what's your position these days on Mick McCarthy?
Big fan. People like him, let's have more of him.
I remember the biggest dereliction of duty ever, which I always talk about, when he refused to pronounce, I think he was commentating on like a European Championship game or a World Cup game or something, and the first minute he had just decided, with the pack he'd been given of all the information on, that he just couldn't pronounce any of the players' names, so he's like, I'm just going to call him left back. I'm not really sure you can get, I mean, I like Mick, but I'm not really sure you can get away with
it. I appreciate his honesty though. I remember in the 2010 World Cup, which, let's be honest, was largely terrible, very low scoring, the Vuvuzelas were like, you know, making it all a bit of a grind, and that had become the narrative at the point that this was a bit of a rubbish World Cup, and it was coming to the end of some sort of boring group stage, 0-0, and he said on like the 85th minute, I know we're here to make the game interesting, but this has been awful. On the BBC as well.
That was a real big thing. That was a really big thing because around that time, I think was the, possibly just before that, was the nadir of professional pundits, co-commentators, just complaining all the time.
Yes.
And they were completely out of touch with fans who would love, you know, if you look at, I understand what you're saying, Jim, about the 2010 World Cup and how, you know, parts of it were quite dull, but it was an exciting thing in and of itself because it was the first World Cup in Africa, because the scenery was so dramatic. And you'd see I won't name names because I can't remember anyone specifically, but someone perhaps on the BBC sofa sat there with, you know, like Cape Town with Table Mountain in the background, whatever it would be, going, oh, I'm not really looking forward to this one. And he's like, you idiots, man. Everyone would be so happy to be there. You've got to be more cheerful. So Mick at his worst can be a bit like that. Yeah. But last night he was on good form, was he?
Yeah, he was on good form last night. And you talked a minute ago, Luke, as well, about it being the last match at Griffin Park. And and everyone kind of talked up this sort of romantic idea of how wonderful it would be if Brentford were to turn the game around and manage to win it and get to the playoff finals. They've done that. And Thomas Frank's interview on Sky at the end was, well, first of all, different to normal because of the situation we're in now. He joined the Sky team over at the side of the pitch.
Yeah.
And it was the longest post-match interview with a manager that I have ever seen.
Game finished early, time to fill.
It was
Nothing coming up.
Partly that.
You need to listen in your ear, you need to fill for 6 or 7 minutes here.
It was partly that, Luke, but it was partly because Thomas Frank is such a fantastic person to listen to.
Yeah.
He's a really intriguing character because I think he's quite different to a lot of football managers that we see being interviewed, where they quite often have these regurgitated answers that they give. They've almost kind of rehearsed them before the match is even over. They know what they're going to say, win, draw or lose. Whereas Thomas Frank's interview, I thought he was very frank, very honest, and really quite emotional, but in a different way, not like a soppy emotional, but just a really he gave really genuine answers to the questions he was being asked. And I think that's probably why he's connected so well with the fans as well at Brentford, because he comes across so honest in his interviews. And I quite like him. I'd love to see Brentford go up to the Premier League, because I think we need more people like him.
And also, you know, Brentford are a club where they might realistically never have expected to ever be in the Premier League. It is a small club, you know, especially Griffin Park is a tiny stadium, and they are like it's weird to say of anyone in or around London, but they are a very sort of tiny, almost provincial community club. And so they're, to even be in this conversation is amazing. And he's obviously a huge part of that. And I can't help but feel that he's also like solving Scandinavian crime, like in his spare time.
But
he's got the look of a man on the edge, like a detective that just needs to solve this case. He's got too close to it.
That's attributed to a lot of people because of the Scandinavian kind of noir genre now, isn't it? Brentford haven't been in the top flight since 1947. So that in itself is a big story. On Thomas Frank, I think the reason he's interesting is partly because you do get the intensity that Jim's alluded to there, and you do get a perceived intelligence around Scandinavian football coaches. But also his path to where he is now isn't a traditional path. I'm happy to stick my neck out and say that I hadn't really heard of him before he came to Brentford as an assistant and then was promoted to the main job. The largest part of his coaching career has been at youth level. You know, he's late 40s now. So he's not come up through a traditional way. He's never won anything as a coach. But you can see when you watch Brentford play, who at their best are brilliant to watch, he's got a really kind of defined system about what he wants to, about how he wants to play and what he wants to do. And I think that'll be, we're seeing more and more of that now. We're seeing more clubs coming up into the Premier League with a kind of defined style that's a little bit out of the ordinary. Sheffield United have done it. Leeds United have now done it.
Norwich
have done it with bad results. and Brentford may well do it now. And even if Fulham do it, it'll still be quite interesting to see how they approach it, given the context of them coming up last time. It was a bit of a disaster. I felt they didn't really know what they were doing. But finally, just on Griffin Park, I used to work in Brentford. I used to work quite literally a stone's throw from Griffin Park. Amazing ground. And I don't mean this in a patronising way, but it is a little ground. It's 12,000 capacity. It's an incredible old-fashioned type stadium. They've been in it since 1904. You have to say this contractually, because we're not going to get a chance to say it again when they move. It's got a pub on every corner. Mm-hmm. That's what it's famous for. You drive out on the M4 out west, you see it from on the left from the motorway. I've got a big affinity with it. I love that type of football ground, possibly because I grew up watching Portsmouth who play in a similar type of ground. And it is a shame that they're going to be playing in a completely new environment next season for traditional fans. You know, this is a shame for them because they're going to have a strong affinity with Griffin Park. So, you know, part of me is a little bit sad that part of football, that history is going to have gone again. And I don't like the idea of every single football stadium being this soulless bowl.
Yeah.
The worst examples would be like the Medeski or St Mary's or, you know, one or two others. And so that would be a shame. I haven't been into the new Brentford Stadium yet. I haven't seen it. I know it's a bit further up towards Kew. I know that part of the world quite well. So I'll be interested to go there. But if they can start the new season in their new stadium in the Premier League, that's an amazing story, right?
Mm. What a story if they can finish the job and get to the Premier League and their first match at the new, whatever it's going to be called, Griffin Park, is in the Premier League.
It'd be amazing. It'd be like they've levelled up as a Pokemon. I think that's how it works. I don't know.
Tell us more about Pokemon.
I don't really know much
about Pokemon. I don't know anything about it either.
Yeah,
no.
I know that they get better somehow. Yeah. I think the analogy works.
Okay.
I knew enough to make the analogy. Yeah. They're keeping the pubs though.
And
right?
I don't know enough to disagree with you here. Yeah. Pokemon.
No, crucially, you've chosen a room when no one can correct you. So yeah. If you're going to get corrected, it's going to be later on when the show's actually released. Yeah. I think the new Brentford Stadium is just going to be called the Brentford Community Stadium.
Oh, is it?
I don't think it's got a sponsor at the moment.
But they are going to keep the pubs on every corner, right?
I don't know.
So you should rebuild Either move the pubs or
there's loads of pubs
recreate
in Brentford.
Them.
Loads of pubs in Brentford.
Yeah, that's, as you say, it's what they're famous for. Pub on every corner, why not?
And people just do nothing. That's the comedy series we're just set in Brentford.
Bang, lyrical blow to the school.
Yeah.
Such a shame, though, that the fans couldn't be in the stadium for last night's match. Real shame. But, you know, we're going to talk a bit more about fans returning to the stadiums in the second part of the show. Before that, though, just a little word on tonight's game. It's the second leg, Fulham against Cardiff. Fulham take a 2-0 lead into this one. We saw a comeback from Brentford last night. Do you think Cardiff could make the comeback tonight, Jim? Or do you think this is too much of a task?
Well, it's always difficult to say with these games, isn't it? Because, as we sort of alluded to earlier, they played at such a full throttle. Like, Brentford scored twice early on. And, you're tempted to look at anyone, like, going in behind, thinking it's an uphill task. But you just don't know, do you? So, I think Fulham are a better team than Cardiff. And obviously with a 2-0 lead, that's going to put them as heavy favourites. But if Cardiff score early on, then I would completely revise my opinion on that. Mm-hmm. So I just don't know, but I'm looking forward to it.
I don't think Cardiff have got, personally, I mean, it could be egg on my face and I'll get the usual Twitter pile on if it does happen. If it does happen, I'll be interested because it's an interesting thing to happen. They're not going to, it's very, very difficult to see them go into Craven Cottage and turn it around. Having said what I've said about Fulham, who are absolutely capable of turning in, you know, the occasional poor performance.
A number of Ricks.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that the plural for a Rick? Just Ricks?
Yeah.
I feel like it should be more than that.
Yeah.
Fulham are capable of turning, you know, a bad performance in. I remember, I mean, more recently, okay, fair enough, they were battered by Leeds, but Leeds were a good team. As I already said, they were beaten at home by Brentford, who were brilliant on their day. But they've also lost 3-0 at home to Barnsley for them. I mean, they're capable of turning in some poor stuff. But having said what I've said, for them to go to Cardiff and win 2-0, that's massive. And that Josh Onnemar goal was a beauty as well.
Such a brilliant goal.
So if we see more of that, I'll be very happy about it. I don't know if Cardiff have got the ability to turn it around.
Well, Fulham had the perfect game plan in the first leg and they completely shut Cardiff out. One of Cardiff's strengths are their set pieces, and I don't think Cardiff had a single corner in the first leg. So Scotty Parker knows what he's doing against this Cardiff side. And for me, I think it will be very difficult for Cardiff to turn things around. But you never know. As you say, Jim, these playoff games are always, particularly the second legs, are always pretty exciting.
I think if anyone's going to keep a cool head, though, it's going to be Scott Parker, isn't it?
He's so chilled,
very
isn't
measured.
He?
1930s fighter pilot.
Very much so. Very, very much
fighter
so.
Fighter pilot.
I also love the idea that Joshua Namama's goal will have an effect on this game, like the quality of it. Like him just like jogging around going, do you see my goal? Yeah. You know, you've seen what I've got in my locker. I could pull that out again. You'll be shitting yourself, won't you?
To which I'd say, why haven't you done it before? if Cardiff face, so if it's Parker v Frank in the final, that's a very respectful lineup.
Can they both go up? Yeah. Sorry, Villa, but can they both go up?
I think it might become sickeningly respectful. And I don't like that. I don't want that. I'll get Warnock back in there. Yeah. Let's have a bit more
well,
needle.
That's why you got Mick McCarthy on the ones.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if he's on it tonight, but I hope he is.
Anyway, he has no way he's doing
it. Not
two
days in a row,
is
he?
No way. Yeah.
Absolutely no chance.
No.
Well, that is tonight's game. Make sure you watch that one. Fulham versus Cardiff. Can Cardiff turn things around? Also, just before we wrap things up from the Championship semi-final playoffs, commiserations to Swansea. I forgot to say, because you've really got a feel for them. As you say, it's such an emotional game, that match, and you could just see how gutted they were. And what made the game even more exciting last night is that they did manage to get that goal back. And it put the game, the last 10 minutes of that match, on a real knife edge, because you know if they score another, that's it. You're going to extra time.
And because of the dramatic circumstances that they got into the playoffs in the first place, that turnaround with Nottingham Forest, they never... I've got a few friends who are Swansea fans. I don't think... And they'll call me out if I'm wrong, but I don't think I am. They didn't expect to be in the playoffs. They didn't expect to get there. But when you get in there into the playoffs itself in those kind of dramatic circumstances, and then that goal happens, you think, hang on a minute, is this just some kind of preordained thing? Is their name just on it and that's going to happen? And that last 10 minutes was great for that reason. But of course, they fell just short. But I think really them being present in the playoffs was a little bit of a bonus for them.
Yeah, let's see how they kick on next season, eh? Well done to Steve Cooper and what he's done there this season. Fulham Cardiff tonight. That is, of course, the second leg of the semi-final playoffs. So we're going to take a...
I was just going to say, sorry, before you do that, I was going to say we got an email, we got a text in from, not a text, what I'm talking about, not on the radio. a tweet. We got a tweet from someone saying, because it looks like it'll be Cardiff and Swansea who miss out, should there be for 1 year only like a third place playoff? Because they're such big rivals. That'd be awesome.
Just so that we can watch it.
Yeah, exactly.
In a car park.
Tops off, just a bit of wasteland. See what goes on. So you can claim to genuinely be, I suppose it would be the fifth and sixth place playoff, wouldn't it? Not the third and fourth.
But normally they're the games that you never want to watch in a World Cup.
No.
The
players don't want to play in them.
No. Whereas we want to see that.
Yeah.
All right, after this, we're going to be talking about fans returning to football stadiums. Yeah, it is on the agenda, and we'll wrap up some of the latest transfers.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is the Football Ramble with me, Jules Breach, Jim Campbell and Luke Aaron Moore. Full name.
Yeah, thanks.
You're welcome.
Sometimes I get confused with the old football playing Luke Moore. So that's why he has to stick the old middle name in there. But it's less
you yourself get confused. No.
Who am I? Yeah. No, it doesn't happen so much now because obviously he's not playing football anymore, but it has happened in the past. Have I been booked on a TV show because people thought I was him? Yes, I have.
Seriously?
So, yeah, apparently so. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's true.
Similar to happened to me. The reason I go by Jim is because there is another stand-up called James Campbell and he did comedy for children.
Wait. Are you actually James?
Yes. Yes,
I
wasn't a baby
that.
Called Jim.
He was James or Jim for a year.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, no one would call their kid Jim.
Baby
no,
exactly. Jim.
So I've got an old man's name early. I'm just sort of.
Would you like to? Would
it.
You like to hear from people who have been christened Jim? I don't reckon anyone listening would have been christened Jim at birth.
Maybe a Jimmy, but even then, I think that's probably a stretch. Baby Jimmy, fine.
Yeah, that's more.
Baby Jim,
I don't know,
odd.
Sounds a bit weird.
For some reason, Jimmy, a baby Jimmy, feels quite Scouse to me.
Yeah. Very much so.
Yeah. And you're Julianne, by the way.
I am a Julianne.
Is that a secret or not?
Oh, no, not it's not now, a secret. I don't even know. Clearly not. You're out with me. Yeah. Only my mum calls me Julianne.
If you're in trouble.
Why is that, though, that only your mums and your dads call you by your full name? Do your parents call you James?
Yes, they do.
See?
If they called me Jim, it would feel weird.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that my brother's called Stephen? All his mates call him Steve.
Yeah.
But my parents and me call him Stephen.
Hmm. Sounds very stern in your household.
Julianne. Yeah.
Everyone by their full names, always in trouble.
My mum loves a good shout at me as well. Julianne! Really? It's a good name to shout.
Yeah.
So I like the way that rises at the end.
Yeah, always, always. Look, there's going to be fans back in stadiums, hopefully, by October. And this is something that we fully welcome. The word is that England's friendly against Wales on October the 8th has been penciled as the first opportunity for England to play in front of fans this year. There are a couple of friendlies before that against Denmark and Iceland. Those will be behind closed doors. I imagine they'll probably be played in the September international break. I'm not sure exactly what the schedule is going to be. However, the government are confirmed to partially open stadiums to fans by October the 1st. And I think that does extend to the Premier League as well. So this is quite exciting, the thought that fans can go back into the stadiums. I don't know how it's going to work and how exactly they're going to do it. I've heard that with regards to the Premier League, it will be home fans only to begin with. So it'll be very different. It'll be a very different atmosphere to what we're used to. But just to be able to have this kind of dangled at the moment, that it's a possibility, it feels like we're getting somewhere.
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it? Can I make the argument, though, that even if fans are fully allowed back into stadiums when we play Iceland, we shouldn't have them in because it's the scene of one of the greatest shames in the history of our game, and we don't deserve...
That's probably why they've penciled it for October the 1st, because that's after the Iceland game, Jim. They're only doing it for the Wales game.
Yeah, it feels a bit Brexit, does it?
What's that?
England versus Wales, fans back.
Yeah.
Chest beating jingoism. Maybe that's me projecting that onto it.
Yeah, I think it probably
like
is
a big opportunity for
you. You do beat your chest a lot. You are a dictionary definition chest beating person. No, do you know what is interesting for me is that people have been, I think, almost unanimously in this country, can't speak on behalf of any other country, but in this country, people have been almost unanimously on board with the idea that football should continue if it continues safely. And I think, although there was some doubt before it happened about whether it was important enough and whether it can be done safely, I think we've now seen it can be done safely. Yeah. But the almost implied contract between the football authorities and the fans has been like, this is a necessary evil. This is like a temporary thing. I think if you were to say football is going to continue indefinitely without fans, that would be hugely problematic for loads and loads of obvious reasons. So at some point, there does have to be an understanding that fans are going to be able to come back for atmosphere purposes, for the idea of how interesting the product is around the world, for obviously financial purposes as well. So the fact that they're starting to tentatively suggest this, I think, is a really positive thing. I wonder, though, given that it's going to be moving through autumn into winter then, and those who know a lot more about this pandemic than I do are suspecting there may be a second wave of infections, whether it's actually going to happen and whether it's actually going to work. It obviously has to be done in a really controlled way, but I think broadly we should see it as a really positive thing because, you know, got to be careful here because obviously I do this job and I love it and I do love football, but it's not been the same. So I was enthusiastic about football coming back just because I wanted it to come back because, you know, obviously, to be perfectly honest, it's our livelihood, but it also is something we love to watch.
Yeah.
And no football at all was rubbish, right? But this is almost like a facsimile of football that we all fell in love with, and we should at least acknowledge that. So we cannot continue indefinitely, I don't think. I'm just speaking as on behalf of a football fan. I don't want to continue indefinitely with no fans. So it has to happen at some point, or it's going to be completely different. So the fact that this is rearing its head now, I think, is a good thing, but it's got to be done very, very carefully.
It's going to be an interesting sort of second stage of the kind of general road back to having full stadiums, because obviously it's going to be a limited number of fans. And that in itself is going to be a bit of a culture shock again, isn't it? We've now got used to the idea of no fans and the fake crowd noise on TV. And it works. It's very quickly become something you're used to. But like a half-empty Old Trafford, it's going to be quite a weird thing.
In a way, it could be worse than none.
Yeah,
do you know
very
what I mean?
Much so, definitely.
Because it'll really highlight how empty it is.
Yeah.
When you get, you know, those kind of the not-so-great League Cup games or the not-so-great early stages of the FA Cup and the stadiums aren't full because the fans just don't tend to turn up for some of those games sometimes, it never looks that great, does it? When you see the kind of empty stands and...
Yeah. If they don't care, why should I?
Yeah. And I'm worried that that might be what this looks like, although it will look very different because the idea of fans coming back to the stadiums, as far as what I've read and what I've been told, is that we are still going to have to operate in a socially distanced way inside the stadiums.
Yeah.
Therefore means that you're not going to necessarily be sat next to anyone. So having this kind of spaced out seating arrangement...
Oh, it's not going to be
It's going to look so strange, isn't it?
And it will sound strange.
Yeah. The positive, though, Luke, if we're going to focus on the positives, is that at least it means the fans who have been missing out on football all this time. I've been fortunate to go to a match as a reporter, and just being able to sit there and watch live football was unbelievable. It was such a nice feeling, even though it's not the same. Mm. And I'm glad that at least some fans will get that experience to be able to go and watch their team live again.
I am as well. Yeah. There are people out there who... And, you know, good on them. And it's amazing how passionate people are about their club, you know, and about the sport generally, who their life revolves around going to watch their team, home and away. And they are the people who should be given the priority because it's really a hugely important part of their lives. And that's something that should be acknowledged. Obviously, we all want to get back to a point where we can all watch football matches in the stadium. It's a great thing to do. But I think we're a long way off that. And this is I would see this as a first step on the road of you know, hopefully the destination being it goes back to normal. But I don't know. No one really knows if life's going to be back to normal generally.
You're right there.
Yeah, I'm just filling in my wire. Sorry. There we go. Much better now. And so
it's a bit of a sort of, you know, philosophical crisis fiddling with your wire.
Yeah.
Is life ever going to be the same? Yeah.
I don't know if it will be, though, Jim.
That's the thing we're all sort of forgetting all the time.
Yeah. We went to the pub last night. It's completely different. It's the first time I've been to the pub for 6 months. It's completely different. So lots of things are going to be different. There's been it's a precedent set in sport with cricket, which I don't know much about cricket, but I believe that's gone quite well. So if we see this as the first step on the road to where we want to be, it's going to be ages before it's back to normal, if it ever will be. So, yeah, it's a positive thing, but who knows?
Interestingly, for the FA Cup final this weekend, I believe there's a couple of ticketed events in London around Wembley that they're going to be allowing a certain amount of Arsenal fans into one area and a certain amount of Chelsea fans into another area. And so I don't really know exactly how that's going to be policed, but I think this is the first this has happened since the footballers returned. So it'll be really interesting to see how that's managed and how that all turns out. And I'll be at Wembley Way for the game on Saturday, so I shall report back.
Yeah, do that.
Week. I will.
Can you think of anything less appealing than going to Wembley and not watching the game?
And not going into the
stadium. Why the hell would you do
torturing
that to
yourself? Torturing yourself, basically.
Yeah.
Torture yourself. Just go to your local if you want to book in for a little session, a couple of beers. I suppose they're not showing football in pubs at the moment,
are they?
I
don't think they are, no.
So maybe that that's the only place you can go. You can always watch it at home, I suppose. It's not something I would do. It's also a pain in the ass to get to, Wembley.
Exactly.
But that genuinely does depend on where you live.
That's true.
If you live in Wembley,
for some people,
probably quite convenient.
Just down the
road, literally a walk.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about some transfers that have been done since the window opened on Monday. A couple of things are over the line. James Maddison has signed a new 4-year contract at Leicester. This
not
is
not a transfer, is it?
That's not a transfer. But it's a deal.
Would you like Leicester to be able to go, we've transfer in, he's transferred from Leicester to Leicester.
Yeah. We've rearranged the living room.
Yeah. He's got a new locker.
Well, I think this is as good as a transfer for Leicester fans, possibly, because, you know, when you've got a star player like him, who's young, he's only 23 years old, and he's been linked with other clubs, the fact that they've managed to keep hold of him and they can now continue to build this team around him coming into the new season, I think is a really positive thing. And I think, good business.
Absolutely. And you're absolutely right. They're clearly, it's a statement of intent, and the timing of it's really good as well, because it shows Leicester, shows that they're, you know, very, they're being very proactive in their plan, because they are really, they are at the ceiling of what you could realistically expect them to achieve, even though they missed out on the Champions League, and obviously the dust will settle on that and it will be disappointing, but it's still a really good season for them. And keeping hold of Maddison is clearly more important than Vardy at this point, because Vardy's 33, he's only going to last for so long, and they're clearly going to build a
team
around
Maddison. He'll
last
forever on the Red Bull, Jim.
Yeah, yeah.
You've never quit.
Right, actually, yeah. Old Jimmy Vardy. But yeah, it's big news for him to get that done early.
He's Jimmy. He does, should be a Jimmy, yeah. Shouldn't he?
So does Madison, actually.
Jimmy Madison.
Jimmy Madison. He sounds like a bit of a, you know, bit of a wrong one, doesn't he? Jimmy Madison.
Jimmy Madison. You've
got to watch yourself around him.
Yeah.
But he also looks like a sort of old man, even though he's 23.
Who, Madison? Yeah. I find that it's obviously a massive bonus for them. I think he's going to become their second highest paid player behind Vardy, who's obviously negotiated that huge contract.
I filled that in with my head and just in my own head just filled that in behind Mesut Ozil. I just feel like he's just
every time,
the highest paid.
It should, it should be listed wide on the highest paid players in the world.
Yeah,
because Mesut Ozil would be right. I mean, in terms of value, Ozil's, it's funny because he gets paid the most of anyone, probably. We've got a couple of other exceptions, but for value, he's at the bottom.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't play.
Yeah.
For we don't know why there's a thing that means he doesn't play.
Is it hard?
There's no value there, is there? There is literally no value.
It's like times
at all.
Are getting numbered by zero.
Yeah.
You always get zero. Is it difficult for him to provide value if he's not allowed on the pitch?
Very much so.
Yeah, fair enough. Anyway, there'll be plenty of time to talk about Ozil between now and whenever he retires. Maybe not, actually, because it might be soon. But Madison is a amazing coup for Leicester because obviously he's been linked with like other big clubs. He's, as I say, he's going to become the second highest paid player at Leicester. His chance creation stats, which people love these days, are very high. He's behind De Bruyne, Grealish, Alexander Arnold, and Buendia of Norwich. 79 chances created apparently this season. You know, I think it's a great statement of intent for Leicester. I do think you talk about their ceiling, Jim. You talk about how, oh well, they can't really go any higher. They had an opportunity. Now I know the pandemic came along, and I know that's difficult to manage, and you can be forgiven for perhaps losing your intensity and stuff. But they need to show an improvement next season because they were in such a good position. Yeah. They were the third best team in the Premier League for a large part of the season, and they've not managed to finish in the top four against good competition. I know that improved teams, but Chelsea were vulnerable. They were so vulnerable defensively, and I think Leicester could have taken advantage of that. And if you look at some of the games Leicester fell short in, particularly after the pandemic, it's got to be a regret, surely. I mean, they lost three of their last four. Okay, Man United's fair enough. Spurs, they were beaten heavily by. Lost 4-1 to Leicester. They were awful in that game. So if they can find some kind of consistency, I think that'll be a really important bonus for them. And Madison is a big part of that.
And the contract protects them in the future as well, because realistically, there are going to be people coming in for him. Like, I don't.
That's what happened with Maguire, wasn't it?
Exactly.
He saw a new deal and he goes for a club record the following year or whatever it was.
Yeah.
You can tell how much he was missed, though, when he was injured for this last part of the season, Madison.
Oh,
so there's absolutely no doubt that this is, to be able to tie him down for 4 years is brilliant for Leicester, brilliant for their fans as well. Have you seen what he was wearing out in Ibiza lately with Dele Alli?
Let's have a look.
Wow.
State of that shirt.
Yeah, I'm now of the age where my brain can't even compute what young people wear. How do you feel about that, Jules?
You sound so old, Luke.
You're a bit younger than us.
I'm not a fan of that T-shirt.
It looks
out there
like,
for me.
What's that terrible brand that Kanye West's mate runs? I forget what it's called, but it's... the T-shirts are ridiculous and they'll cost about $400 and they immediately sell out.
Balenciaga?
I forget what it's called.
About fashion.
Anyway, not a fan. No. You talked about Harry Maguire leaving Leicester last summer. A deal that may not happen, but something that is rumoured to be happening, is Ben Chilwell making a move away from Leicester. He was linked with a move away last year, and the rumours are kind of circulating once again. And it does seem to feel like every year Leicester seem to sell a key player. Of course, last year was Harry Maguire, Mahrez before that, Kante before that, Danny Drinkwater. There are these kind of key players from the Leicester squad that seem to have left. Can we see Ben Chilwell leaving? The club that he is linked to is Chelsea, and you can see that he would improve the Chelsea team. They need a left back, don't they?
They need someone who's familiar with the concept of defending, don't they? And Chilwell very much fits that bill. But I think this is the payoff, isn't it? This is how, if you're a team like Leicester, you have to do everything right to be at that top table. And I think realistically that involves probably selling a player like that a year to keep the money coming in. And
I feel like Ben Chilwell, it looks too normal to go to a club like that.
I know you mean.
You know when Leighton Baines just didn't go anywhere?
He looks like your mate's mate.
Yeah, because he looks like your mate's brother who's in the army.
Yeah.
Like, But Leighton Baines didn't go to a bigger club than Everton, with respect to Everton. He was obviously he's an Everton legend and he was brilliant for them, and we know that. But he didn't go to a bigger club. And part of me thinks it's because he's got slightly longer hair and likes carrying an acoustic guitar around. He just wouldn't fit in. He's like, that's not for me.
He also sounds like a commuter town.
Yeah, it does, Leighton Baines.
You don't want him in the big city.
Yeah.
He's more of a sort of suburb.
And I wonder if Ben Chilwell was a similar kind of cut of that cloth, maybe. What do you think, Jim?
He's got a screamer in him as well as Baines has.
Yeah, there's a lot of similarities,
there are,
I think.
Actually, yeah.
They look quite similar.
Right.
Yeah, same height as well.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, it's not scientific, Jules. But and let's not forget as well that Ben Shearer was capable of turning in genuinely quite poor performances. And he gets the... So this is perhaps an unpopular opinion. For example, I think Harry Maguire is really overrated. He's got a lot of obvious flaws in his game, in my opinion. I kind of wonder if Ben Chilwell's a bit like that. And
really?
Wonder if he's a little bit overrated.
Yeah.
Do you think so, Jim?
I'm not so
I agree.
Sure.
Yeah,
I don't
I
know.
Think he's a 6 out of 10 occasionally.
Yeah.
And that's not what you want in a
Well, you want
Champions
a 10
League
out of 10, don't you?
Time. Yeah.
Don't you,
every time,
don't you,
ideally.
Mick? You want
yeah.
a 10 out of 10.
For me, I think he's, after Andy Robertson, probably the next best left back in the league.
All right. There we go. And you're the professional among us, you're
yeah.
so you
no,
we should
I'm
probably
just,
defer
I,
to you.
I think he's definitely up there. And I think that if Chelsea managed to get him, or if Leicester managed to hold on to him, either of them are big winners in that sense. I think that one thing that we have to commend Leicester for is that even when they have sold these key signings I've just mentioned, like Kante, like Mahrez, like Harry Maguire last year, they seem to have known what they're doing with it.
Yeah.
Like with Harry Maguire, everyone thought, well, that's Leicester done for then. They're like, what are they going to be without their best centre-back? And then up steps Soyuncu, who has had a remarkable season, but he'd been waiting in the wings for a good year and a half before Maguire left. And Leicester obviously knew that he was capable of still holding this defence together. And he's been fantastic, obviously, barred the sending off
yeah.
just towards the end of the season.
No, that was even amazing, because that was like some kind of super villain stuff.
Yeah.
Like it was like he was in some kind of medieval fantasy bad guy
he
mode.
Looks a bit like a
he's
vampire
amazing,
as well, doesn't
he
just punch someone in the net.
Yeah.
Or kick someone in the net.
Yeah.
He did something in the net, which made it more
after
dramatic.
After they conceded.
And the goal had already happened.
Yeah.
So I love that. I love that burning passion to properly do someone in. And it fits because of what he looks like, right?
But I just enjoy violence.
The measure for me is when I've got the football on and my wife likes football, but she's not that into it. And if she passes comment on any of the players, you know they've got something interesting about them. And she's
yeah.
passed comment a couple of times or so, she, probably because of his hair and that he stands out a bit and he's big and tough. And everything
what
I'm not,
what she
basically.
Said about him?
Yeah, she's just like, oh, she said, I think she said he looks a bit like a samurai or something like that. Because
vampire samurai.
And it absolutely fits with what he kind of looks like, the profile. So I'm all in favour of doing that. He also played a lot of games last season, very reliable. But Leicester are a team, I feel like, if they lose one or two key players from a game, from a fixture, they're liable to lose games quite, not regularly, but they don't necessarily tend to win games you don't expect them to win. If you look at the first half of the season, their fixtures were very kind. They were front, like very, very back heavy in terms of the fixture list. And if you take out a Ricardo Pereira, or you take out a James Maddison, or a Vardy, I think they struggle.
Mm.
And like, you look at someone like James Justin, the right back they got from Luton, who was brilliant.
Really good.
Yeah, he was brilliant. He's not quite there yet. And that's a drop off from someone like Ricardo Pereira, who's been standout good. So I just think they've got a few things. They've got quite a thin squad for where they are.
Similarly, Luke Thomas, who filled in for Ben Chilwell since he got his, I think it was a heel injury towards the end of the season, very young, but did quite well. He got an assist against Sheffield United for, I think it was Perez that scored that goal, and a great goal it was. And I think he's done quite well. But as you say, Luke, he's not going to be a direct replacement for the likes of a Ben Chilwell, regardless of whether Jim thinks he's just a 6 out of 10. But
Sometimes.
But Luke Thomas is... That defence for the last few games of the season did look young and inexperienced.
Yes.
And so I think they will try and hold on to Ben Chilwell. Of course they will. Let's see what happens. That's something that we'll keep an eye on. A deal that has been done, that was done yesterday, Joel Veltman, Ajax defender, signing for Brighton.
Oh, why are you always talking about Brighton?
God.
It's pathetic. It's absolutely pathetic, isn't it, Jim?
Oh, seagulls, brunch.
Yeah.
Well,
oh, London
Lucas.
On sea.
Yeah.
We're the club making the deals, boys.
That's true. That is true.
If there was anything more to talk about, we could talk about it. But it seems to be that Brighton are the club that have done their business nice and early once again. So the window opened on Monday. Two deals have been done. This one went over the line yesterday. I mean, he's a defender, central defender, can play at right back as well. 200 appearances. He's made over 200 appearances, I think, for Ajax. 22 international caps. And he signed a 3-year contract. And I think Brighton got him for about 900 grand. It's a bargain,
it's
if
amazing.
You ask me.
Yeah. You rarely hear the word grand.
Yeah. No player moves for under a million these days. Unless they fucking play for Portsmouth.
Unless they're crap.
Yeah, we don't buy anyone expensive.
To be established Premier League players.
We don't sell anyone for any good money. I think it's a really interesting signing, you know. I mean, I saw him play for Ajax in the semi-final of the Champions League against Spurs. I was at that game. And he's obviously a very experienced player.
Such a good
player.
Game that was. It was
brilliant.
By the way,
yeah. This is the first leg though,
which
wasn't as good. But anyway, he obviously has played at a very, very high level. Played internationally as well. He's technically very good, as you'd expect from what I've seen. But the kicker, I think, for Brighton fans who don't know that much about him, is that he's had two very serious cruciate knee ligament injuries. One at the very start of his career, and one not that long ago. The one he had a year more recently put him out of the game for a year.
So we've bought two injury-prone players since the transfer window opened.
Brilliant.
Congrats.
Sounds familiar, actually.
When you see... I mean, there might be... do you remember when Arsene Wenger signed Kim Kjellstrom with a broken back?
Yeah.
That's the worst of all the injuries, isn't it?
But, yeah.
If I said to you...
You really need that.
How do you get a broken back?
I know. If I said to you...
Severe.
Jim, there's three physical injuries that you never want to have... Broken back would be in the three.
It'd be right up there.
With neck, back,
neck,
and
back.
Head.
You see, we signed a dead player today.
Yeah. Yeah, I just thought that was absolute like peak Wenger banter, wasn't it?
He didn't really do much, Kjellstrom, but he did score a penalty
in the semi-final.
Wigan, I think, and I watched it in a pub full of dogs.
I was at the game.
And it was great. Yeah, because in Brighton, funnily enough, and obviously every time it was an Arsenal pub somehow. And every time a penalty went in, obviously everyone celebrated. So the dogs were like, they were just happy. So Aww. It looked like the dogs supported Arsenal. Because every time everyone cheered, the dogs went mad as well. So.
The pub we were in yesterday was an Arsenal pub as well.
Yes. Yeah, very much so. But I'm led to believe.
Yeah, I was at that game, the semi-final. And the thing that really endeared me to Kim Kjellstrom, I don't know why.
Was he holding his back?
Yeah. So he walked up with one of those walking sticks from the film, the Disney film Up, with the four tennis balls
frame,
on the bottom of it.
Yeah.
And
frame.
He scored his penalty, and he later on said it was the best 15 minutes of his life.
Aww.
So, got to be a little bit endearing about that. So anyway, Veltman, I think, is an exciting player, but I do think he comes with a bit of danger. Brassel would know loads more about it than me. Mm. There's probably some other reason that he's cost hardly any money as well, possibly contractual, I don't know.
It's a calculated risk, isn't it, clearly?
Yeah,
but I think it's worth taking.
He's experienced, you know, and he's seen and done it all. If he's playing in the latter stages of the Champions League, then, you know, for Brighton, with respect, that's amazing. It's a great...
I think the interesting thing about this deal or this transfer is that he spent basically his whole career at Ajax, 18 years, and the fact that he's moved to Brighton, to me, obviously says he wants to play in the Premier League.
He's at the world-leading Academy of Football, and before that he was at Ajax.
No. It's interesting. I'm baffled a little bit by it because I'm wondering where he fits into the team.
Mm.
And it worries me that this may spell the end of one of our defenders who I love. And that's always concerning because Lewis Dunk is always linked with a move away. So we'll see what it does mean. I don't think Brighton will have got him in to replace a Lewis Dunk, but it always worries you as a fan of a club. Like, why have you brought him in?
We've got Big Webster as well.
Exactly.
Super giant Webster.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I like
but he can play right back, can he? Is Martin Montour any good?
Yeah, he's
all right. Okay, right.
I like because Lewis Dunk is a competent defender that immediately gives him huge, huge value. He is simply just a very, very competent old-fashioned centre-half, isn't he? And that is what... I feel like everyone's lacking that.
Yeah,
like every decent Premier League team, aside from Liverpool, are lacking that.
Yeah, I would. It seems to be a rare beast. It's like goalkeepers, isn't it?
Mm.
So maybe it's a fact that you don't really notice them unless they make mistakes. But I kind of feel like you know what it's like with goalkeepers this season for me. There's obviously plenty of good ones, but it feels like when I watch a League One game on the telly and the referee, you look at the referee, you think, God, this referee is so bad. Every time I watch the Football League, the refereeing is so bad.
Mm.
It kind of feels a bit like that with goalkeepers in the Premier League and co-commentators. Martin Keown.
I think it's become almost like fashionable in a way to slate goalkeepers this season. It seems to have been a theme of the season.
Are you saying I've made it fashionable?
No,
Luke, I just followed the
you've
heard.
Not made anything
okay,
fashionable.
you know, De Gea and Kepper have helped there, haven't they? To be fair,
they're in the
burgeoning slating goalkeepers scene. Yeah. They are the two most exciting prospects.
Fred Lampard piped up to something amazing like last week, where he said, "I mean, it wasn't this exactly, but it was quite old fashioned." Because you know, Fred Lampard's got that kind of like he's got that kind of big Tim Sherwood energy about him. He's like he's like Tim Sherwood, but good, right? Is that fair?
Yeah.
Yes, that's good. Tim
exactly
Sherwood
right.
couldn't guide a team to the top four of the Premier League. Frank Lampard clearly can, but they've got the same energy. And they're all a kind of similar gang. So Jamie Redknapp, Harry Redknapp, Tim Sherwood, Frank Lampard.
Mum's new PE teacher boyfriend.
Yeah, all that kind of... They're almost a bit like the Only Way is Essex football version, right? But Frank Lampard said something amazingly old school. It's either last week or maybe earlier this week, where he said, I know it's important for goalkeepers to be good with their feet, but it was something like he just said, but I just want my goalkeeper to make saves. He's like he's at the end of his tether with it, and he costs 75 million yeah. or whatever he costs. So, you know,
it's like he's forgotten he can use his hands and I don't know what to do.
I think we might be entering peak goalkeeper banter years,
yeah.
and I'm looking forward to it.
Do you reckon he'll play the final, or do you think Caballero
no,
starts?
No, I really don't, and I'm actually a little bit concerned about that, I have to say, because I don't think he would have dropped
Would you
Kepa
prefer
before.
Kepa to start?
Yeah, definitely. Because you just shoot from anywhere
Jules,
and you probably score.
It doesn't make any
yeah,
sense.
Exactly.
It's like when you start an under 11 game and you hear a rumour that the other team's keeper's not turned. Right, shoot whenever you get the ball.
Yeah, completely.
Oh, I feel a bit sorry
Players were
for
doing
him.
That with De Gea this season, I'm telling you. They yeah. were shooting on purpose from distance because you never know. And that's not a great position to be in. And
also,
Kepa is worse than De Gea.
But also, the thing with that as well is the defenders know that. So the defenders are more nervous. So they second-guess themselves
oh, yeah.
and they're not
yeah.
as focused linked. As they should be. And I think with Caballero, I mean, their defence will be naturally better, not just because he actually uses his hands to stop the ball going yes. in the net.
No man
which
is an
is
island.
The main bit.
yeah.
Well, look, there'll be a lot more build-up to the FA Cup final between Arsenal and Chelsea on tomorrow's show.
Yeah.
Luke, you're going to be back for that one with Marcus and Vish. I'm sure you'll talk a lot about tonight's game between Fulham and Cardiff as well. And it's going to be Vish's debut on Luke's game.
Yeah, so Vish was talking a very good game in the pub last night.
Yeah, that's because he was pissed.
He said he went off on one about how good he'd be at it, and then he said, although everyone does say that, so maybe when I'm actually playing it might not be as easy. So we'll see. He's up against Marcus, who is just passionate to win yeah. everything all the time.
Oh, love it.
And to be fair to Marcus, he's had to play Andy a lot, so it's a tough assignment.
Tough, yeah
so it'll be
tough.
Interesting to see how it pans out. Stick around for that.
Yeah, look forward to it. Jim, Luke, thanks for today.
Cheers.
See you guys soon.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.